So I've got my squeaky chair. I've got the last dregs of my cup of coffee and the light is on the microphone. And I've actually managed to work out how I went and changed the settings on my recorder so that it wasn't recording quite properly. It was recording in mono. It was off to one side in my headset, which was rather weird. I've obviously been tampering with something that I shouldn't have been. Hope you've all been keeping well. Not too bad here. Plenty going on, hence the reason why the podcast is a couple of weeks late. Also the reason why a little bonus podcast about World War II photographers hasn't turned up yet, but I'll talk about that a little bit later. For really good photography links to come, some interesting photographers, some interesting photography, and some interesting photographers' stories. So looking forward to that. We might as well start where we usually start, with a little bit of housekeeping. So there's a few things I want to mention, but I want to concentrate really on the links for this podcast. So we'll just go through these very quickly. The website's had a lot of work done to it. I started working on the web links page on my website at richardflintphoto.com and realised that it needed updating. There was quite a few websites that, well, for the want of a better word, they were archived. They hadn't been updated in a long time, and I don't really see the point in updating or adding or keeping a site even that is out of date or not being updated. You know, it's great as an archive if you want to link to it for that, but I like the idea of sites that are still being updated and loved, basically. So I went through the web link section and altered all of that, and it basically spread to other areas of the site. There's still quite a lot of work to do, but it's certainly looking a lot better than it did. A lot of the gaps that were left after I stopped using Twitter have been filled by updates about the blogs and just a few layout tweaks, things like that. It's looking a lot better than it did. And I'm really pleased how it's going. There's also been some changes to the Redbubble site as well. That passed 555 images available. I think it's 564 at the moment. But there's some more images to add. So we should definitely pass the 600 images on Redbubble this year, which is good. I'm trying to come up with some ideas for images that, you know, I haven't, you know, some styles, some subjects that I haven't covered before. So I'll have to see what I can come up with this year. TeePublic is another store site where you can buy my work, t-shirts, art prints, mugs, that kind of thing. Now, this was initially set up via Redbubble, but I went through it last week and actually sorted out a lot of the layouts. Basically, the import went well to import the images across from Redbubble along with all of the text, but it didn't sort out the layouts on mugs, on t-shirts, on how it printed, how the art prints looked, that kind of thing. And I literally had to go through all 550 images and sort them all out, which took a bit of time. It took about 4 days, actually, just going through and just altering each section, going through each of the pictures and just altering it all. It was quite intensive, but at least it's all been done. There's various different sections that have been added so that if you're after, you know, Scotland or Wales or railway images or aviation images, it's easy to find them. And it is there as an alternative to Redbubble. I am aware that Redbubble, it does have a few high shipping cost problems where it's not so bad actually finding the artwork, but actually getting it to you can cost a lot of money. And I am aware that in some cases, it is putting people off, depending on where they are in the world. So I'm wanting to come up with alternatives for that, so that anybody who sees one of my images and wants to buy one, wants to buy a print or wants to buy a T-shirt, has got some options, some choices about how they can do that. So we've got Redbubble, we've got TeePublic. There will be another option coming maybe later this year, but certainly next year. But at the moment, at least, there's two areas. TeePublic, from what I can gather, seems though it's aimed more at the US, which is where I was finding that some of the costs for some of the items was getting a little bit too high. So I wanted to come up with an alternative for the US. So if you are in the US and you do like one of the images on Redbubble, take a look at TeePublic, because it will probably most definitely be on there, because it literally was an import across from Redbubble. So all of the images should be on there. So that is that. Right, the World War II Photographers podcast. Now, I was thinking about getting this podcast recorded and out there, but I sort of like changed my mind about the subject matter. I thought I don't see the point in covering those photographers like Robert Capa, George Roger, those kind of people. Again, there's been a lot said about those people, lots of articles online. You can go to the Magnum website and they've got some great articles about those photographers. I want to sort of like discuss some of those World War II photographers that aren't as well known, weren't in the spotlight. The plan is to get it released, record it and have it released and ready for the 6th of June, which is the 80th anniversary of D-Day. I think that would be quite a nice touch, just a symbolic day and a great time to release something about World War II photographers. I think I'm probably going to be talking about two or three photographers rather than just one, discussing their life, their photographs, my favourite images of theirs, and also adding some links about where you can find their work. So that's what's going to be happening with the World War II podcast. Been a little bit delayed, but I think it's going to be a real good bonus podcast, probably about 10-15 minutes, something like that, just all about World War II photographers. So I've stretched it out a bit. Originally it was going to be about 5 minutes. So we might as well get on to the links, because we are doing quite well for time. I will just mention that I'm going to add a couple more links. One of them is going to be to the World Press Photo winners for this year, because there were some quite impressive winners there. There's been a lot going on in the world, sadly. Some real tragic events. And photojournalists are usually there with witnessing these kind of things. Sometimes the World Press Photo does a really good job of picking winners, and other times I just kind of think, I don't know why you really went for that, but I do agree with their choices this year. They do seem as though they picked some really strong images. The other link I'm going to add, it was a quite interesting discussion on the BBC media show, and it was about kill orders from the press agencies. Now, this is all to do with the Kate Middleton story that came out. It was certainly a bit of a story in the UK. I don't know how it played out abroad, but essentially Kate Middleton was under press scrutiny because of her health. She'd been into hospital, but the press didn't know why, the media didn't know why, and she was under a lot of scrutiny, and she released a family photo to just sort of like say, hey, I'm okay, here's the family. And initially it was put out by a lot of the news agencies, who then promptly put out a kill order because, shock horror, the family photo had been manipulated in Photoshop. And they were sort of like regarding it as a press release, which it was, but it was also a family photo. And let's face it, how many of us have taken a family photo that hasn't been altered you know, in one way or another with Photoshop, you know, get rid of Uncle Frank on the end, make sure that, you know, an auntie is smiling. There's all sorts of things that we can do now to improve an image, and there's nothing the matter with that, but I do think that we need to start having a discussion about how we regard photography and photography as truth, which quite honestly I think is a ridiculous statement. Photography is as truth is just, I think, rather naive. But I've seen photographers who have come out with that statement. I do think we just need to sort of like discuss about the merits, and also take a look at manipulation generally. Photography is a fantastic tool. Like I was saying, you know, that there are a lot of merits to manipulating a photograph well. You can make some really good political points if you're doing something like a collage or something like that. It can be fantastic. But I think we all have to kind of like have our own different philosophies regarding what we do. Now, mine tends to come from my darkroom days. So, in other words, I will add a bit of contrast. So, you know, high grade of paper. I will do dodging and burning. But I won't do a huge amount other than that. But other people have got different rules for the way that they work. But I do think it's interesting. And the story with Kate certainly made me realise and think about what I was doing to my images in Photoshop. Do I manipulate too much? Is dodging and burning manipulating too far? There's all sorts of things. So there was a very interesting discussion, like I say, on the BBC media podcast, which I think is worth a listen. Don't particularly agree with all of the ideas. I think they are being a little bit too stringent, and really they should take a look at the image and then work out. I understand that they think, you know, that a family photo released from the royal family should be a press release, but, you know, it's not quite the same thing as a photographer shooting some war images in the Ukraine, is it? There's a few little nuances in there that make them different. So we'll add that to the bonus links. So there should be about 6 links altogether. Right, let's get on to the first link. So I'm a big fan of Chris Killip. I've mentioned him before. I've even done a bonus podcast about Chris Killip in the past. But this is an exhibition. This is an exhibition that is on in Bristol, the Martin Parr Foundation Gallery in Bristol, and it's on till the 30th of June. And this new exhibition brings together two photographers, Chris Killip, who I'm a big fan of, and Graham Smith, who is a new name. I wasn't aware, which is rather a shame, because Chris Smith's images, he shot them in my part of the world, but also round about the same time as Chris Killip, a different sort of eye, but a similar sort of like subject matter. And quite honestly, the exhibition looks absolutely fantastic. If I was anywhere near Bristol, I would probably head off to have a look at it. But it just brings together. This is on the Guardian photography blog, and it just brings together some of their images. So if you like really gritty documentary photography from the 80s, of 80s Britain, then I would highly recommend you take a look at this link. It brings together some of their best work. A great place to start if you're not familiar with Chris Killip or Graham Smith's work. You can just take a look at their images and then have a look for some more of their stuff using a Google search. So that's the first link. Boom and Bust in Industrial Northeast in Pictures. a new exhibition brings together Chris Killip and Graham Smith's seminal shots of England's northeast from 1975 to 87, when heavy industry and working class life were transformed. An excellent set of images. The next one is also from The Guardian, and this was rather an interesting story, again about a photographer, a documentary photographer that I'd never heard of, Akahiko Akamura. And the remarkable thing about this Japanese photographer is that, you know, he photographed the Troubles in Northern Ireland. You know, a remarkable story. It turns out that he got captured. He was a working photojournalist, and he got captured in Vietnam by the Viet Cong. And due to sort of like making a story about his ordeal, that he was kept, I think it was about 50 days, something like that, from what I remember. But he basically published an interview with one of the senior people that had captured him, which meant that he ended up being banned for 5 years from working in South Vietnam. Obviously, his report did not please certain parts of the South Vietnamese government, so they decided to ban him. I mean, it could even have been American military that had decided that they would not issue him with press accreditation. So he ended up working in various of the different parts of the world. But he ended up living in Ireland with his family, which it is an absolutely remarkable story to read. And his images are also absolutely fantastic. They've got a real human element to them. He was an absolutely magnificent photojournalist. Sadly, he died young. He died in 1985, I believe, from sepsis. He got blood poisoning while he was out working. I can't remember where it was. It's somewhere in the article. It does mention in the detail. But, you know, an amazing photographer who I think would have produced fantastic work. He just had a great eye. He just had a fantastic eye, and a very different sort of view of the conflict to what some photographers were trying to do in Northern Ireland. I think maybe to the certain extent it was the fact that, you know, he didn't have any real connection with the place. It was sort of like that detached eye that maybe a British photographer wouldn't have. But the work, Akamura's work, is absolutely fantastic. And he spent, you know, throughout his 16 years in Ireland, Akamura continued to work as a photojournalist. The article says covering conflicts in Biafra, Ethiopia, working regular for NGOs and humanitarian organisations. Here it is, 1985, he became ill while travelling from Ireland to Japan and died of sepsis 2 weeks afterwards. Just an amazing photographer, and I would love to see his work in a book. That would be something that I would love to see. I think probably my most favourite image of his from this page is probably Building Burning, Derry, Northern Ireland, 1969. It's about three quarters of the way down the page, but it looks like a painting. But it's just people just watching a building burn. But there's just, I don't know, there's just something about it, just something about that image that just grabs you. So an excellent bit of photography and human interest story, and story about the photographer that getting banned from Vietnam was just a really interesting. I have heard about it happening to some photographers going over there. You had to sort of go with the story. You had to be careful what you put out. You couldn't be too off story, shall we say, when it came to what the government and the military over there wanted you to say. So you had to be very careful about how you put things. Otherwise, you could end up with your press accreditation being revoked. So there's always this discussion about Vietnam being a very free war for the press. It was free to an extent. But after that, you had to be very careful. Otherwise, you just wouldn't get access. The next one is a bit actually photojournalist-y this month. So the next one is about the extraordinary life and photography of Tim Hetherington. Now, Tim Hetherington is a relatively modern photographer. Sadly, he died in 2011 in Libya. He took some amazing images. Again, another photojournalist who sort of like had a different eye to a lot of other journalists out there. And it's a remarkable story. Definitely worth a look if you're interested in Tim Hetherington's work, or if you haven't heard of Tim Hetherington, just a good place to start when it comes to finding out what he was about. I'd certainly recommend taking a look at that. There's also a few links as well that I will, there's another link on the side if you want to take a look at some more pictures. That's the Storyteller Photography by Tim Hetherington in Pictures, which I tell you what, I will add that to the list of links as well. So that's, we're up to 7 links now. Wow, it's a bit of a bonus. Oh yes, that's a good collection of Tim's images, so we'll add that as well. So check that out. The final one is another photojournalist, and this is a work and legacy of photographer Anja Neidringhaus. I'm sure I pronounced that correctly. If I haven't, I'm really sorry. But this is, again, another photojournalist who died while doing her job. She died 10 years ago in 2014. While on assignment covering the Afghanistan elections, and basically she was sat in a car with a colleague and an Afghan policeman shot her as she was in the car. Her colleague survived, but sadly Anya didn't. Again, this is another collection of images that have been put together by NPR.org, which is a fantastic resource online for photography. Not one you would actually think of, NPR, over in the States, but they do have some interesting photography come on a regular basis from around the world, and definitely worth a look. And there's plenty of images of Anya's to look at. So I would highly recommend this. It's always a tragedy when a photojournalist career is cut short, especially when it's done in such a needless and cowardly way like that. But at least, the images, are still there for us to look at. And unfortunately, wars are always going to be risky. Sadly, we've got, a number of conflicts going on in the world at the moment where photojournalists are regularly putting their lives on the line to get those photos. And a photo isn't worth a life, but I suppose it depends how far you're willing to push the boundaries of getting those images, and some people are willing to push them a lot further than I would. I did have an interest in the early days about war photography, but I think it's something that, I don't know, I think it's a mindset. You've got to be a certain kind of photographer for that, and I'm not that. So that's it. That's it for the podcast. I shall be back again probably next month with another podcast. I will try and get working on my World War II photography podcast as well. Get that out for the 6th of June. I hope you will join me next time. So thanks very much for downloading this podcast. Thanks very much for listening right the way through to the end. And I will see you all next time.